Hey, everybody. Welcome to Reality Rehap-Ups, the Rob Has a Podcast podcasts that do not include Rob. And more's the pity, because I know he's a huge fan of exciting Amazing Race episodes where there's a lot to talk about. But never fear, guys. Dan Heaton and I are here to handle it. Dan, how about this episode?
Well, Jess, I have some news for you. It's a big headline. This is going to make you upset. A woman is going to win the Amazing Race Canada. There will be a female and possibly two on the podium at the end. How do you feel about this?
I feel pretty great. This is exciting news. I do feel like maybe it was slightly rigged. That does not take away the sweetness of the concept for me at all, because I think I got to give props to Amazing Race Canada for looking at that, saying that might be a problem. Let's cast some very, very strong female teams. And this is not to bag on Stefan and Antoine at all, because we both thought they had a lot of potential and we thought they were going to go a lot farther than this, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, last week we got the question of which teams had surprised us, and they were at the top of the list. And even watching this episode, because you could kind of tell early on, they had so many interviews early on and did not look happy. You kind of had a feeling things weren't going to go great. But even watching it, I kept thinking, well, this task is not going to get them to take a penalty. It can't be this task. They're going to pull through. Someone else is going to get overheated or mess up. No. Unfortunately, and I think they had potential. I do think they're one of those teams that probably could have done okay, but they just have one of those legs. And that's the thing with the Amazing Race, and that makes it hard to say which one is really the best or worst team, because all it takes is one ugly leg in the heat and you're gone.
Yeah, it's true. And you don't really know what your moment's going to be. Like, there have been plenty of strong teams that have hit a wall, like whether it's your haystacks or your unscrambling a five-letter word. You know, there's a task out there, and it's true of every single team out there. They just haven't hit that task yet, but there is a task that could completely undo you, and it turns out this is that one for Stefan and Antoine. So we got to write their eulogy, I guess, this week. This was a tough leg all around. That heat did not seem like fun.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that they took the penalty but then ended up doing some really a physical detour and finishing that in the heat after all of that is a testament to the fact that they didn't just quit, because it was one of those legs where, you know, there were a lot of penalties this week, but most of them were not because people quit. But there you could see the teams were really feeling it. And it wasn't really the fact that they went overseas. It was just put them in a really hot place and make them walk around and, you know, bend over and pick up things and do, you know, luckily the dance was not out in the heat, because we've seen that affect people too.
We certainly have. I'm recalling one of the many seasons of US Amazing Race featuring Luke and Margie. I remember Margie passing out completely. And I was not surprised that the heat got to some of these people pretty hard. It brought to mind the sand digging challenge in this past season of Survivor.
Right. There's just one where you're watching it and you can almost like feel the heat coming off the screen. It's just like everyone looks so miserable. And I mean, the fact that, you know, Stefan quit a task that was not, you know, in theory, if you looked at it, you'd say, well, yeah, it looks kind of irritating, but not the hardest task ever, but kind of like doing a sandcastle. But you put somebody in a really hot spot and they're just like, he wasn't thinking clearly.
Yeah, I think I'm also reminded of the one particular leg last season of Amazing Race Canada. You put somebody in extreme temperatures and anything you have to do becomes that much more difficult. So, of course, you're not thinking clearly.
Right. And yeah, because even when they started to talk about, shall we take a penalty? I'm going, no, don't, you know, because, you know, they ended up technically not finishing last, though, you know, obviously they probably would have if they stuck to that. But he fell apart, and it's too bad, but more power, you know, it's nothing, just really, it's not really as much a negative about him. I mean, obviously they lost, But it showed, I mean, you saw some powerhouse performances tonight from some of the teams, even, I mean, Ann and Tanya pushing through that challenge at the end was pretty awesome.
So, Dan, is it safe to say that we talked a lot last week about which teams have surprised us the most? Is it safe to say that every single team on this season has surprised us?
Pretty much. I mean, I guess the only team that, I mean, Steph and Kristen have pretty much come as advertised. I mean, yeah. I know they finished lower with the, but they got the express pass. I mean, to go basically, you know, 2-6-2, and then they would have probably been they would have been second all 3 weeks. But yeah, in some way, like even Jillian and Emmett have not been what I expected, of not really knowing their background. But, and for Ann and Tanya to finish eighth, and for me to go, wow, they did awesome, tells you something right there about how hard the leg was.
Yeah, that's very true. I have to say, I think the MVP is for me this week, and it's going to require a lot of eating of words here, but I got to say the MVPs this week were Kelly and Kate.
Yeah, and the fact is it didn't even, like, you know, sometimes like Frankie and Amy finishing fifth this week, I kind of went, how did that happen? Like all of a sudden, but this was a case where Kelly and Kate were near the front of the pack. They did their speed bump. They stayed near the front, and it was pretty, it was almost like a Jet and Cord, like come from behind speed bump move. I mean, I know they finished third, but I'm guessing they were pretty close to the top teams.
It seemed like there was not a lot of space between those top few teams. Although this does, to get back to the task quit this week, this does kind of raise another wrinkle in our why do Amazing Race Canada contestants take so many penalties? I have another theory on this, because what do I have to do with my time except put on tinfoil hats about why Canadian Amazing Race contestants take so many damn penalties? But I was noticing something, and this was a real throwback to the old seasons of Amazing Race US. We saw all of the departure times, and all of the departure times were pretty spread out. There were gaps of 2 and 3 hours between a lot of these teams. And so I have to wonder if that makes it more attractive to take a penalty, because you know that there's so much of a gap between you and other teams that might actually not destroy your game if you have to sit on the mat for 4 hours.
Right. And I actually wrote down all the departure times, which I don't know what that says about me.
It says you're a nerd.
I actually paused and went back and wrote down the rest. But what it says basically, though, is that there's a spread of, if I got this right, somehow I only have eight numbers, so I apologize, but it's a spread of almost 4 hours. Like the spread I saw start. Oh, actually, it's more than that, because the first team left at 1:49. So you're looking at a spread of almost 5 hours of time between the teams from last week. And that is huge, because I think one of the reasons a lot of times, well, US also doesn't seem to want to waste time on it, but also a lot of times their legs aren't always super long in general. So the teams are probably really close together, because if you only have a 2.5 hour leg, the odds of teams being 4, 3, 4, 5 hours behind is a lot shorter.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think if you're accustomed to having that leg take you all day, and being accustomed to having stretches of several hours where you don't see another team, or where you know a team is way behind you or way in front of you, it becomes almost an element of your strategy. Like, when is it worth it for me to finish this task, and when is it worth it for me to bow out? And granted, that doesn't necessarily address Stefan's major malfunction this week, but I think it goes a long way toward explaining what might be going on in the heads of all of these people who don't even call it quitting a task anymore. They just say, shall we take the penalty?
And the funny thing is, now, too, we've had two eliminations, one non-elimination. Both teams that got eliminated took the penalty. And granted, the first one was a bit different, because they could have, they would have, did not know about the weather issue. But this time, you know, you think in theory, I don't, and this is not critical of him, but in theory, let's say he wasn't so hot, and it took him another 15 minutes. They would not have been eliminated, I would expect. So it also, both teams, you could say, lost because they took a penalty. So will this discourage teams from taking them in the future. I have my opinion. What do you think?
I would hope that it would, but I'm not 100% confident that it will. What do you think?
I think it will not discourage them. Maybe someone watching it, maybe it will discourage teams in season 5, but it would probably have to be more like, we would probably have to see it happen again this season. Because if you're watching it, yeah, it happened in the first 2 episodes. By the time you get to episode 7, people are like, wait, who got eliminated in the first episode? What happened? So it would almost have to happen further down the road where a team who was like a powerhouse, like if Jillian and Emmett were in episode 6 and they take a penalty strategically thinking there's no way we're getting eliminated and they do, yeah, maybe that would impact people.
I think you're right. I think it's got to be a team that we think could have won the race otherwise. And we got to see it very vividly and blatantly cost them the race.
Yeah, and we're not there yet. I mean, we still have, you know, now 8 teams left. So there's still a lot of racing left. But, there still were quite a lot of penalties. But, of course, that was just their usual, you know, don't read the clue kind of penalties for the most part.
Right. And, you know, that's rule number 1 of this show is you always have to read your clue.
Yeah. So shall we get into the actual episode?
Yeah, I think we probably should. We've been talking about this for about 10 minutes at this point. And I guess the headline is we're getting out of Canada. It's our first overseas jaunt of this particular season. And we're heading to Kaibei, Vietnam, which many astute viewers pointed out to us that this is a place that is not unfamiliar to Amazing Race superfans because we've seen it visited before in Amazing Race US season 15.
Yes. And, you know, Vietnam is a pretty common race place, but being how long ago season 15 was, I don't think even US viewers would be that familiar because personally, I don't have a great memory with this, but what happened in season 15?
Season 15, and it's really kind of funny that the reason that I remember season 15 so vividly is mainly down to the fact that they had a team from Montana who went fairly far. They were a father and son team named Gary and Matt, and Matt was kind of alternative. I think he had purple hair at the time.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they were a pretty strong team. They did very, very well. They ended up going out in 5th place, but I remember this Vietnam leg very, very vividly because I remember Matt taking this exact same roadblock pretty much that we saw this week on our Canadian counterpart. But I remember him like singing to the ducks and moving them over the bridge and kind of doing this sort of drill sergeant chant at them. And this is not the thing that most people remember about this particular challenge. This was also Zev and Justin's first season. And I think most people remember Zev taking this roadblock, being very good at it, and christening himself Duck Whisperer. So that was my touchstone. As soon as I saw those ducks, I thought, this is the exact same place they visited, and this is almost the exact same roadblock.
Yeah, so that's where it's good that at least, I mean, again, U.S. versus Canada, not everyone who watches The Amazing Race Canada has seen the U.S. version, and especially not all of them have seen U.S. version that long ago. But it's still interesting that they picked a roadblock that is so similar.
Well, that's not something that's brand new. That's been done before many times. The super, super fans who do track down and watch every single international iteration of the program will notice this gets trotted out a lot. This happens very frequently. You see, like, for example, I think there's a task in India that several different seasons have done where they have to make fuel cakes out of animal manure, and they have to make a certain number of fuel cakes. And I think that's been done in 4 or 5 different international versions of the show. So they go to a location. If it's a really good location, then and the task works well, and certain tasks are just the right balance of challenging, visually interesting, and easy to film. So those tasks, you know, most people in the world, I would venture to say 99% of Amazing Race viewers are going to watch the version that airs in their home country, and they're not necessarily going to track down every version. So what's to stop everybody from, you know, borrowing each other's ideas? And that happened here, although I do note the task was slightly different in this case. And I did want to talk about this a little bit, Dan. So to refresh everybody's memory, in Amazing Race 15, the duck task involved this huge pen full of ducks. It was way more than 20. I don't remember exactly how many. But you had to herd them like through this obstacle course. You had to take them over a bridge and back over the bridge and then back into their pen. And it seems to me that that seemed a lot harder, but nobody had a terrible problem with it.
Well, it's interesting because I have now located some information on this. It says 150 ducks, which that is a lot different than it was 20. Was that what it was, I believe, on this one? Now, granted, not the same task. You know, you're herding them. Maybe you're not like this one. The issue was also teams were kind of running into each other and their gate couldn't stay closed. But that does seem, the other one seems more difficult. And really, for the most part, most of the teams, partially thanks to Stefan's help, did not have a huge problem with this. So now I have another question. This is the most important question about this task. The US version, the clue said, "Who's feeling just ducky?" Now the Canadian version said, "Who has all their ducks in a row?" So which one is the better clue?
I think "who has all their ducks in a row" is better, but I am waiting for another international iteration of the show to involve some sort of pun on quack. And that will be the one that wins.
Like, who wants to get quacked up?
Exactly. Who wants to take a quack at this roadblock?
Oh, we could go on for a while, but we have a job to do here. We must focus.
Yeah, we really shouldn't go down this path. It's a dark path. I mean, Julian Lowell would love it, I'm sure. Like, I'm sure they would have a list a mile long, give them 30 seconds and they do it. But we have bigger fish to fry. We have bigger ducks to quack. Not only was it 150 ducks in the US version, they had to do it in 10 minutes. And if they didn't do it in 10 minutes, they had to start over. And in Canada, they had fewer ducks, didn't have to do anything difficult with them. And it seemed like it took everybody, definitely it didn't take them hours and hours like it did for poor Stefan, but it took them longer than 10 minutes in most cases, I think.
Well, maybe they got ducks. They got the more challenging ducks for the Canadian version. These were not the ducks of the US version. These were Canadians and they were more difficult.
So you're saying they have like special ducks that they have recruited for their feistiness?
Maybe, because that's the only explanation. Because really, and I know we skipped over a little bit of a task that we can get back to, but what was Stefan doing? I mean, I understand near the end, the penalty makes sense to me. He was hot. He was tired. He couldn't do it. But I assume he thought if he worked with another player, like they'd work together, they'd each get some ducks, it would be faster. But is there any reason to work together on a task like this?
I would say Steph and Amy had a pretty good plan where they got in sync with each other. They realized that you have an easier time herding your ducks if you have two people, like each manning a flag, and you can kind of head them off when they try to escape formation. So that is not a terrible idea in and of itself. Here's where Stefan screwed up, I think. I think he screwed up because he was just like helping people and not getting any help back in return. And I think there's where he screwed up. Like, and you saw Steph and Amy, like, we get Steph's ducks in and then she steps back and she gets Amy's ducks in. And it only takes a couple of minutes. They've helped each other. They're in and out. And on his own, Stefan was not getting very far. When he helped other people get their ducks in, they did a little bit better. Where he screwed up was he didn't make sure that he was getting something back for that help.
Yeah, it's like he was dancing with someone. He had like a dance partner. And his dance partner went and danced with someone else. And all of a sudden, he was just standing there by himself with no one to dance with. And then he didn't know what to do. So he just kept grabbing random people and dancing with them too. But they were not his partner. And I know that's a bit of a stretch, but he did have that look like all of a sudden he's like, well, I'm helping. Other people worked when they helped, but he forgot he actually, and he did have bad luck with his gate near the end. But by then, I think it was his ship had kind of sailed.
And I think it's also worth pointing out that I think one of the things that this task had going for it that the U.S. task did not. I think it was a much hotter day. I think the weather was not working in anybody's favor. And again, you get that overheated, your brain stops working normally. And I think that was towards the end, we're reaching a point where he was not going to be able to effectively do anything.
Right. They could have said basically almost any task, tie your shoes. You'd be like, no, I can't do it, you know, or something pretty simple. So it was one of those things where, yeah, in theory, the strategy was probably good, but it was almost probably because of the heat that he couldn't totally put it all together and realize I've got to bail from what I'm doing and just focus on myself.
You know, we already saw one team collapse from heat exhaustion this episode, and we didn't need to see it happen more than once. So there's probably some self-awareness at work there.
Right. Like he realized, if I continue, I'm done. You know, and then he recovered probably somehow before they got further along, you know, not being out in the heat, it helped him recover. So, but before this, they did have to do, they had a stretch where they had to run to a dock and then they all got their own water taxis. I kind of like the way that they, because I expected at first that they were going to have something where they split them in groups of three or they had departure times. But they just basically numbered them 1 through 9 and had them depart that way. And I thought that was interesting. It wasn't a huge gap, but it did kind of split them up a little bit right up front.
Right. And I think you do need to kind of, those departure times are the modern day race's artificial way of rewarding teams that get things done more quickly. Like you get there first, you should be able to leave first. And even if you have a little bit of bunching in there, I think this does help separate them out and reward a team that has good navigational skills and hustles their buns and gets there fast.
I should also mention that I was saying how good Steph and Kristen had done, but they did have their fun moments of just like wandering into on someone's property and having dogs bark at them. And they're kind of, they didn't get the dodo music, but they could have, they were at that kind of moment. So even though they've done very well, they were the ones who were most confused at the start by the supply run challenge they did right there.
Yeah, and I was wondering very, very briefly, and you know, I hate those questions that we get from people where they're like, is this person the new this person? But I did have a moment where I was like, Steph and Kristen were really good racers until they got out of the country. Are they the new Gino and Jesse? And then I thought, I'm not going down that road.
Or, yeah, that's, we could go that way, but then I guess they won. So that would be a victory for my fantasy team. So they can be the new Gino and Jesse, but we will not continue that direction. Well, this was also the spot where teams picked up all the penalties. Like, you know, and normally we don't see that many in a row basically pick up penalties. And then, and I will say that this was a case for Steph and Kristen where they were the team that noticed they had done it wrong and went back. Now, it raises the question, though, of did that take longer than 30 minutes?
That's a good question. I have to imagine it didn't. It didn't seem like the water taxis were terribly slow. And it seemed like, you know, zip back, get your ferry, it's all good. I do want to admonish the teams that noticed that they were probably doing it wrong, but figured, hey, all these other teams are doing it, it's probably okay.
Yeah, that's always the approach where it's almost like once you get rolling on something, you see teams do this where some teams take a cab and they have to take a bus. And once they go, they're like, one of them will be like, well, we have to stop. And the other's like, no, we're doing it. This is what we're doing. It's like, well, yeah. And you've seen teams eliminated by that. This did not have a huge impact, but it could have. I mean, if Stefan gets the ducks, you know, you never know what's going to happen. So it was interesting. And this is also where Kelly and Kate really shined. We have found the task that they are great at, and it is shopping. It is not carrying toads. It is not doing, you know, some other things they've had issues with, but shopping. And there are shopping tasks fairly often on The Amazing Race. This could help them.
Yeah, this is a frequent, especially when you're going to a country where you know everybody's going to get culture shocked. It's a very popular task to just give them a shopping list and set them free at a market where everything's not in English. That's a very, very common thing. And so it's not surprising we see it here. And I have to apologize to Kelly and Kate, because last week I said, well, the only way they're going to do any better is if we see them get a task that involves putting on false eyelashes or grooming themselves. And lo and behold, they are also good at shopping. So I'm sorry, Kelly and Kate, you had a great leg and I undersold you.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because I felt like going in that they would be a team that would be overwhelmed by the circumstances. They didn't see, and even Frankie and Amy to a point, who we've discussed before. And I'm not saying that because of this leg, this means they're going to win the race or something. But it was impressive that, you know, normally you go to an international country, you go overseas, teams that are going to get overwhelmed, like your Nick and Sabrina type team, usually do worse in that case. But they seemed almost like getting last place and the speed bump. They just seemed pretty laid back this time. I mean, yes, they like I said, their little things freaked them out a little bit, but they did not seem to get stressed out. And that's what you have to do on the race, especially when you have a speed bump, which was not the hardest speed bump ever. But it also was not just, it was not sitting in a sauna. So it was something in the middle, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Gary and Matt.
Right. That's what I thought of when I thought of who they were. Like, they have that image of like them just sitting in like the mobile sauna and thinking, this is the lamest task ever. Not as lame as sitting on a block of ice, but pretty close.
I still think the gold standard in ridiculous speed bumps would be the Beekman boys having to eat ice cream and turkey.
Yes, that's like a reward. That's not a task. That's like a reward challenge, something you get. I mean, that they do give that out as rewards at Survivor, the ice cream. That's a common thing.
It's true. It's true. It's like, here is your prize for coming in last. But yeah, anyway, it was a challenge, especially like there was a little bit of a gross out factor. And I think that's one of the several points you can hit when you're trying to design a challenge that's going to be tough for somebody is, like, hit them where it's going to squick them. And they really did not enjoy picking up the toads and moving them across the market where, you know, some teams are not going to have a problem with that. But Kelly and Kate, that was the right team to give that speed bump to for maximum entertainment.
Right, because the whole point, the actual carrying of the toads across the market, not difficult. It was not like they made it so you couldn't find it or something else. Really, the whole challenge of it was, are you going to get freaked out when you carry these toads? And, you know, I mean, they were doing like very few at a time, but they made it fun and it did not, no one said, I am deathly afraid of toads and I quit. So that's always a plus.
That is definitely a plus. And I think you do have to kind of take them two at a time. I think you really don't want to carry a whole armful of toads and risk them busting out and going all over the place and you have total anarchy.
Right. Oh, that was nice. Total anarchy. But yeah, and that's a good point because it's an easy task. But if you think I'm going to grab seven of these and then one crawls under a market and then, you know, maybe they didn't like account for this. And then you're like, you're done. And so maybe a few at a time, especially they knew they were near the front of the pack. So they probably figured they, you know, as much as you can use logic when you're scared of toads, but that they were good.
Yeah, I think they were able to approach it conscientiously and not have to worry about it really destroying their race. So they didn't have to go into panic mode. They could just, you know, handle the toads at the speed that they were comfortable with. And it all worked out in the end. I don't even think they dropped a place while they were finishing the speed bumps. So good for them.
Yeah, no, they arrived first at the roadblock and I think they did fall a little bit behind, but not that far. I mean, they were still in the top two or three, I think. So that's good. And, you know, I think last week I said they would definitely not survive July. Now we still have more episodes, but given that we may see another non-elimination some point in July, you never know. We'll see what happens. Weirder things have happened.
That is very true. And I think there's going to come a certain point where if they keep performing like this, I'm going to be full on balls to the wall rooting for them to win the whole thing.
Well, it's interesting too, because we talked, I mean, I don't think it will happen, especially due to Emmett and Jillian, But we talked at the beginning about, well, would it be crazy if the final five was all was female, female? I don't think that'll happen. But if you look at the remaining teams, I mean, yeah, I say this in that Joel and Ashley just finished first, but I wouldn't think it would be crazy for some of these teams to outlast Joel and Ashley or Julian Lowell. I think it's a pipe dream, but technically it is still possible. There are five out of the eight remaining teams left where that could happen.
I'm all for it. I want to see it happen because I think that'll be entertaining. But I think we're going to have at least one dude in the final three. That's my prediction.
The most, I think, yeah, even if there's a U-turn or whatnot and Julian and Emmett are not in the finals, your odds are pretty good. I think they're the most likely, but your odds are pretty good that some dude will make it. And then it'll probably be one dude and two female teams. And you'll be looking at it like in, you know, Amazing Race US 17, where that was the case. And, you know, it ended up working out, but you figured your odds were pretty good at that point.
Yeah. You know, every time I think about season 17, it takes me a while to remember who that third team was, because you had these two female powerhouse teams, and then you had Jill and Thomas, and the only thing I remember about him was he wouldn't shut up about Notre Dame.
And actually, I was thinking, like, you realize I did not say their name, it's because I did not remember.
It's because it's come up before is the only reason that I did.
And they're not like a particularly egregious. They're a young couple, but they're not like one of those young couples that you hate. They're kind of okay. So I guess, but they were also overshadowed, especially by Brooke and Claire, but I also Nat and Kat are great. But not to go off on a tangent,
no.
We must continue to the unfortunately titled detour options.
Hydrate or vibrate.
So you got to have a lot of teams say, we're going to vibrate.
Yeah, and I think John got an inordinate amount of enjoyment out of it's their call, hydrate or vibrate.
Yes, I mean, and I even think hydrate, kind of a dumb name for that task.
Yeah, I think this is kind of a tortured rhyme that we had to tease out of this particular detour choice. Although I will point out that as a former athlete, coconut water is better than Gatorade. Like, they're not wrong about that. And I was thinking at a certain point while they're loading up the coconuts and they're starting to get overheated, like, one of them needs to just freaking crack open one of those coconuts and go to town on it, because they're loaded with potassium. It's good to replenish your salts and your water. So that's my tip. Coconut water, better than Gatorade.
So Tanya should have just basically said, okay, I'm getting overheated. Let's break out these coconuts. Of course, by that point, I think they were far enough where then they would have had to go on back and gotten more. And like, that would not have been the best point to do it.
Right. Take some extra coconuts. That's actually in my notes. Is anyone preventing them from taking extra coconuts and drinking more?
Or, yeah, that's a good question. But also, just in terms of like, you know, couldn't they just have some as backups in case you drop, like you lose one or something? I mean, it seemed like they were all very, maybe it was probably a rule that they could not take more because they all were very certain on the count.
Yeah, it seemed like they were making a big deal out of, we have exactly 60 coconuts in our canoe. And at first I thought that was just Jillian being OCD because this was not Jillian's finest hour by a long shot. But yeah, maybe it was, you have to take exactly 60 coconuts and you may not destroy any additional coconuts.
Yeah, Jillian, I mean, they didn't really have a lot of screen time this week, which was fine because I think
I
saw
more
enough
of that.
Well, not even that. I saw enough narration from them last week that I didn't really need to see. I mean, you know, they finished fourth. They got, you know, most of what they did was the penalty. But so their one big scene of the week was her freaking out. And granted, I'm not pinning this all on her. This is kind of reminds me of last season with Matt and Dana, where like she was yelling and he just like wasn't there or something. And this was even more that way, where it was like Emmett couldn't even hear her. And granted, she was getting upset, but the fact that he wasn't responding seemed to make it much worse.
I honestly, it reminded me more of Haley and Blair, because I think she even She even directly channels Haley at one point with, "You always ignore me and you never listen," which was something we heard Haley say a lot. And Emmett was really doing the Blair thing of like, this is who I'm running the race with. I'm just going to deal with it. And I don't know, honestly, if ignoring your partner when they get into this mode is really the best way to address things. Like, Dan, what would you do to mitigate this circumstance?
Well, it's tricky because you don't want to turn around and yell back, because you've seen teams do that where like one gets upset and the other one goes, "I'm just trying my best." And then they go crazy. But I think, and I don't think this is just for the race, I think it's probably a case in life and maybe in marriage and other relationships, that maybe when your partner is upset, it's best not to just say nothing and go about your business. Like, you know, if you're at home, don't just go keep doing what you're doing and not say a word. And I know later he's like, "I'm doing it for the team." This, you know, sure, it did get the task done. But man, you know, when you've got, and Jillian, I'm sure, is not an easy partner to have at times. But like Haley and Blair, I was thinking of Blaley and just kind of got all roped up, is a great example. Because granted, I think he was kind of a case where he would even like kind of say some smart things, you know, to the camera or to, you know, everything, where I don't think Emmett, I just feel like, was just kind of put his head down. It's like, "I'm going to power through this," and like blot it out. And I don't think that's the best approach. I think he at least has to say something, but the key is being not getting into like some sort of shouting match.
Yeah, that's true. And it seems like, to his credit, and I think we don't see this enough with regard to a lot of our reality TV teams, it seems like Emmett knows what is and is not going to help in the scenario. And he knows that anything he says is just going to make it worse. He's got those giant biceps. He could probably do the whole task himself. And you can see the thought process. Well, if I have to do this all myself, I'm still going to get it done faster than everybody. So I'm just going to go ahead and do that. There are teams of couples that have connected on other reality programs that I think do not handle this quite as well.
Right. Right. Yeah. And the thing about it is I don't feel like he wasn't going out of his way to antagonize her or something. I think he was focused in on the task. And this has not let him off the hook at all for not responding, but he was focused on the task, and she kept getting more frustrated. And all it might have taken is in hindsight, of course, is a few statements of, or letting her do a bit more. But I think they're both competitors and they handle it in different ways. He does the kind of, "I'm just going to push through the pain." And she does the kind of, "I want to talk through this and I want to, you know, I want to do well," because that's why she gets frustrated. But they just handle it in very different ways. It's going to be interesting because I don't think this is going to be the last time we see this.
God, I hope not. Because it could be pretty boring. They could be a pretty boring team if they're not doing this, which does, again, go back to your parallel to Dana and Matt, who were only interesting when they yelled at each other, and they didn't yell at each other nearly often enough.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because I really think that they are not, Jillian and Emmett are not your typical, we talked about this previously, they're not your typical reality TV crossover type team who was brought in because they're crazy or what, are giant characters. She gets frustrated, but they easily, like I saw last week, they're not particularly amazing in their interviews and such. So this is something that, beyond their skills in the race, which are real, this is another element that's going to keep them, you know, entertaining in quotes, I guess.
So my question for the Big Brother Canada viewers out there, tell me what these guys were like in their diary rooms, because what we've seen is, like, organically, they seem to be big enough characters and they've brought enough entertainment. But every time we get them in front of a camera and ask them a specific question, they are at Gino and Jesse levels of entertaining. So was this something that they contended with when they were on Big Brother Canada? Like, how did they do in the diary room? Were they good storytellers? I want your opinion. Like, please weigh in the comments.
Yeah, I would love to know, because especially him, He's good for the race, but he's very stiff with the, we didn't see much of them talking that way this time, but they're a powerhouse team. And I think obviously, regardless of where they finished, they're going to be a team that's right now, they still stand out as the team to beat, even especially with, you know, Steph and Kristen do have the, you know, express pass, but that only gets you out of one leg. And those two teams seem still to be way out in front, even though some teams have surprised us.
I have one final thought on Jillian and Emmett. And that is that watching them on this program makes me very, very sad that Hayden and Kat broke up before they could be an amazing race team, because I think the Hayden and Kat duo would have been on this level and it would have been amazing. So I'm kind of sorry that Kat didn't make the merge and rendered herself undateable, because that's a team I would have liked to have seen. And I think it would have been very much like what we're getting from Jillian and Emmett.
I think we would have seen it too. I mean, who knows what goes on behind the scenes, but Survivor liked Kat enough to bring her back, and they obviously like Hayden for, you know, and he did very well in a variety of ways on that show. They would have been on. And I think it would have been something to see, especially when they didn't have a lot of sleep and you're flying, especially in the US, flying around the world. That would have been something.
Well, the popular theory is that that's why we got the other Survivor team in season 25. But that's another tangent for another time. I want to talk about Joel and Ashley for a second, because I'm seeing, you can't really call it a pattern until you see it happen three times. But I've seen two consecutive episodes where this has happened now, and I think it's worth pointing out. Joel and Ashley pick a detour option. Turns out to be the harder detour option. They stick with it, they power through, and they get it done faster than the other teams. And we've seen this happen twice in a row now, and this leg actually netted them first place because they were able to get that dance mastered quickly. Are they maybe stealth contenders we didn't really consider?
I think so. And I also think it's important to point out that they haven't finished low yet. And that's really important for teams that go far. They've been very steady. And yeah, I mean, there was an early point this leg where she said, "We're last." And it's like, yeah, but they hadn't really done anything at that point. So it was like, oh, you're last before the leg really starts. But they are really steady. And like you mentioned, neither one of these were particular. I mean, for her maybe, but for him, this vibrating was not really in his skill set. So the fact that they did it and they have a good relationship and they seem to navigate pretty well, I think they're a very steady team. And that is not a criticism. What it means is you're going to watch it and they're probably going to go 4-4-1-3-5-3-2. And it's just like they seem less likely to have just a disastrous Stefan and Antoine type leg than some of the other teams.
Yeah, totally agreed. I think consistency means a lot at this point. And throughout the race, that's going to be a bigger and bigger asset. They seem like they aren't going to have a major meltdown. And again, every racer out there, there is that task that you are going to hit a wall on. It's your personal hay bales, your personal duck herding. But it's very likely they will not hit that task. And if they do, maybe it won't even knock them out.
Yeah, I think they have a good chance. And assuming that one of them is not unable to swim, they probably have a really good chance to avoid some issues that, because they're, you know, that, and I hate to just immediately go to the father-daughter team, but I think Joel and Ashley are stronger. But Simi and Ope kind of had that just kind of steady power through. They were not as good, but they just, you know, there were certain things they ran into. There were just too many different things they couldn't really do by the end. But it'll be interesting because they may not look as strong. And yeah, and I remember the first leg, the first task, she was like crying and everything. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be something. But she's also pretty deceptively athletic and strong. And I don't mean that in any type of criticism. But she may be almost as strong as Steph and Kristen, maybe, you know, just because she seems to be able to do most any of the tasks we've had.
That is true. And I think there's something to be said. I think there are especially I think this is a female thing, because I think we mostly see women do it. I guess we've seen a couple of men do it as well. But I think there's a certain type of racer that is just their reaction to things that they don't want to do. Like, but they feel their feelings and they get through it and they get the task done. I mean, I think the gold standard of this is Rachel Riley, who, you know, threatens to quit and cries and screams and moans and complains and then does the task and is totally fine with it. And I think that's a key difference from teams that like freak out and refuse to do something and say it's impossible. And Ashley may just be one of those people that needs to feel her feelings about the task in front of her and then go ahead and rock it anyway.
Yeah. And they also are less likely to make all the other teams mad at them. Like, you know, which again, we don't need to revisit that season at as much little as possible. But yeah, it's I think she's very strong. And I think he is, you know, we've seen those dads before. Those dads that you look at him, and he's fairly young, so I don't even want to pin him in with some, but dads that, you know, they're just really steady and they're in shape and they have that right demeanor. And they, I mean, I'm not going to call them the winner, but, especially because they're not on my fantasy team, but, I think they're going to be around a while. I think, I think I said this about Stefan and Antoine last week, but I think the odds are even higher that they will be around a while. So I have a question for you about this task, though.
Okay.
Do you think the judging was not particularly harsh for this task?
Well, you run into this on every task involving choreography. Some of them are very, very subjective. And I'm thinking specifically of season 20, you know, speaking of Brenchel, I'm thinking of Mark and Bopper in season 20. At a certain point, they just kind of let them pass the task. And with choreography, it's one of those things where you don't know when you step into that task, whether they're going to want you to just get all the steps down and do them in rhythm, or if, you know, your foot has to be in this exact position and you have to turn this many degrees. And that's really frightening to me. Like, that would make me want to avoid categorically every dancing task they have.
Yeah, I would avoid them also because I have no rhythm. So that would also be the second reason. But I agree that you just don't know. And in this case, I think this was one of those that was more about get through the task, do everything. And you may not look so graceful, but like, because there was a few, like Frankie and Amy, you know, and a few others where I went, oh, they're not going to get chosen. Rita and Yvette had a similar thing. And then they said, okay. I was like, all right. I don't think we saw anyone go more than two tries. And it may be that we just didn't see everything. But I think maybe also the practice and watching took a while. So it was almost like they set up a certain amount of time where no one could get through the task faster than that amount of time because they knew how long Hydrate took. So there might have been a little bit of finagling there with how they set it up.
Right. And I think it is kind of a moving target because they are trying to think about, like, how much time do we have total in the day? How much time is the other task going to take teams on average? We need to make sure that this one is comparatively difficult. And so I think that's where we arrive at, you know, this taking a while for them to master so they don't have to try it 53 times. But if the coconut task had been harder, I can't imagine how it could possibly have been harder. But, you know, if you had to take 100 coconuts or whatever, we would have seen the judging on the dance task get comparatively harsher.
Right. And the fact is the coconut task looked very hard, but most of it was just the heat because and also, you know, the fact that they had to go a pretty decent distance from when they like, you know, took the boat and got there. And I know I think we've covered most of it, but I do want to give a shout out to Anne on this task because we've seen plenty of teams, you know, it was really hot. You've seen teams just kind of shut down it and they would have been totally understandable too. I mean, Tanya obviously pushing through was great, but the fact that Anne at the same point while she got there better, it's like, I'm still doing all this. I mean, they really powered through and while they still finished eighth and I don't think they're going to win the race, they're by far not, they're stronger too. I feel like I just keep saying the same thing back to what you said about surprises, but it shows you, and it kind of gets to what, when we had that question about comparing seasons, I think there's a lot of deceptively good teams in this cast.
Yeah, well, I think we had a couple of different people ask us at the beginning of the season, does this seem like a weaker batch of contestants? And I think we really, at this point, I think it's safe to say we have to throw out our concept of what is a strong team and what is a weak team. And how do we judge that? Because so many teams here are defying our expectation of what we think they're capable of doing and what we think they'll be good at. Because I think there's no team here that I'm prepared to say is a weak team anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and we barely mentioned Julie and Lowell except for about the puns, but they finish near the bottom of the pack, but they don't really make any big mistakes. It's like one of those things where they're doing, like, sometimes just being okay will get you first place. And the fact is they're doing fine. I mean, they've had a few points where they get a little caught up, but they do fine and they finish sixth or they finish seventh or whatnot. So that tells you right there, the cast is not weak, because the steady team, I mean, another steady team is not finishing that high up.
Yeah, it's true. I don't think I could point at any of these teams. And last season, this was not the case. Like, this season, I can't point at any of these teams and say this is obvious cannon fodder. We thought there might be those teams at the beginning of the season, and they've all pretty much defied our expectations. Whereas we were looking at last season's crew and saying, oh, well, I think this team's got to go. This team's going to go next, and this team's going after that. And with very few exceptions, they did not surprise us all that much.
Yeah, we were pretty good at predicting it last season. I mean, there were a few exceptions, but in general, like even Brett and Sean, I think I had doing really well. So we were pretty good at it. I don't know. We'll see how this season goes. It'll be interesting, too, after how hot this leg was, and I'm sure exhausting, is how they all do next week. Because, you know, come first leg, you fly over, it's hot, but then some teams are going to be still wiped out, you know, depending on how long the pit stop is. I think next week we could see some teams, and we saw it in the preview, falling apart.
Yeah, I agree. And of course, they saved some pretty exciting stuff for next week. It looks like somebody's going to be eating a witchetty grub, so that's always entertaining.
Yes, that will never be a bad thing. So is there anything? Should we get to questions?
I think we're about ready to get to the questions.
Okay, well, I purposely did not ask this earlier because I thought it was a good question. Mike Bloom asked, is Steph and Kristen's strategy not to tell anyone about the Express Scripts flawed, considering they will have to eventually give one away? And he did ask about when the second one was, and that is to mention that the second Express Pass must be given away next week. So that's interesting, too. But do you think, I don't have a strong opinion here, but do you think that it's going to hurt them not telling people about the Express Pass?
I don't think people are that invested in, you know, shaming other people for not giving out the Express Pass. But I do think I have a very game theory sort of philosophy when it comes to the Express Pass. And that is that you should tell everybody about it, and then you should give it away as quickly as you can. Because you want to maximize the number of opportunities that another team will have to use that Express Pass, while also minimizing the chance that you're going to run into trouble and another team will use their Express Pass to pass you and knock you out. So my theory is, you know, tell everybody you want it and then give it to a team, and it doesn't really matter which team.
Yeah, and that I think that is a good way to go, because that's a really good point, because you want them to use the Express Pass while you still have one. It's almost like you don't want it to be a case where let's say in episode 5, Steph and Kristen use it, you know, and then they give it to Joel and Ashley, who use it in episode 6 when they're, you know, whatever, 6 and 7 or whatever. That's not the most likely scenario, but it's an interesting point. And what I have enjoyed is that because they haven't told everyone, we have not seen what sometimes happened to the US version, where a whole episode is just everyone talking about the Express Pass, because that is not my favorite thing to watch on The Amazing Race.
Nor mine. I think my favorite scenario in which you can give away your Express Pass, I think Jet and Cord did this in season 24. They see the country singers struggling. Caroline and Jen say, hey, give us the Express Pass. They're like, all right, here you go. And then They used it up almost immediately, and it was never mentioned again. Nobody was kissing their asses to get it, and it was out of play. You want to get that other Express Pass out of play ASAP so it doesn't mess with your game.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a way, I mean, next week for them to basically see someone struggling to eat that thing, you know, or something, eat the grub, or and just say, here's an Express Pass, like when they finished or something like that, and try and do that exact thing. Now, that's probably asking for too much for them to have remember Jet and Cord's move or to think about that in terms of game theory. But it was interesting. So who do you think, who are they going to give it to? What's your thought?
Well, we've talked about this a little bit. We talked about it immediately after the Express Pass came into play. But I would definitely see them, they're going to be a little cautious about making deals with people. So I think it's definitely not going to Jillian and Emmett. And I think they're not going to necessarily be looking to get something out of it because they've seen where that could come to burn them in. You know, that has already been a problem for them in the past. So I just see them finding a team they like and they say, you're cool people. We think you should have this pass. You know, very similar to how Hamilton and Michaela handled it. We see ourselves in you, Brent and Sean. Here is our other Express Pass. Enjoy.
Right. Like, let's say since they're both near the top, they end up with Kelly and Kate early on and they're like, they're kind of fun. Let's give it to them or something like that. That, you know, that could be what happens. And if since they're not on another flight, you think they might be near one of those teams. But I doubt Joel and Ashley finishing first might not give them the chance.
Yeah, I would have said it was Joel and Ashley, like up till this leg. But I think Joel and Ashley are kind of past the point where they can hide their light under a bushel. I would almost even say, you know, pick a team that's, you know, they're nice people that are near the back. Like Ann and Tanya would be a great team to give this to.
Right. I agree. And even though they're last, I still, like we talked about, there's not an obvious, like after last week, Kelly and Kate, but if they had finished eighth again, I'd say, okay, they don't give it to them because they're struggling. But Anna and Tanya do seem to be pretty safe in that way. It's, you know, but whichever way, we will find out soon, which is good. So it doesn't get become a long running thing. Cause sometimes I feel like they have a longer time to give it away.
This is the best way to handle it. Like make sure it doesn't take over your entire program, but give them enough time to think about it and then get it out of their hands, put it into play. I'm totally cool with this approach.
All right. So do you have other questions?
I'm skimming our Twitter because we did get a lot of people tweeting at us. Jeff Howler wants to know, should the penalty for not taking the ferry have been more than 30 minutes? Because maybe that makes it worth it to take the water taxi and the penalty.
This kind of goes back to what you mentioned earlier, because my thought is, because they used to do this more in the early seasons of the race where they would say, you gained 8 minutes, so it's 38 minutes, or you gained this.
Right.
We don't see that as much anymore. So my thought is, let's say the ferry came didn't go that often and they did gain anything, then I expected it to be longer than 30 minutes, but I was kind of making the assumption that they gained time. But this is a little different than like a taxi versus bus situation where you know the taxi's faster. Here, I'm not really sure. So maybe 30 was enough. It did affect placement.
Yeah, it's true. It did affect placement, but it didn't seem like it was that much of an advantage. Like, I don't think it was destroying someone else's game to do that. So I don't know that it was necessarily, I don't think it was necessarily a conscious game move on anybody's part.
Yes, I agree. I have a question mainly just to set you up for a one word answer.
Okay.
And the answer is not yes or no. So here we go. So James Ong asks, why did Stefan not get any reciprocal help with the ducks? Now, I'm going to see if you can answer the correct word here.
There's a correct word?
It is a Linda Holmes word. I will say that.
Yeah. Oh, I know what the word is then. The word is race with about five A's.
that's all I really got to say, because I understand you want to help out your fellow racers, but they were not, other teams were not concerned that he was struggling.
The fact that Linda Holmes has moved on to NPR and doesn't watch Amazing Race anymore, that really bums me out. I just got to say that.
I should mention that on Pop Culture Happy Hour, her podcast recently, her co-host Stephen Thompson, in his What Is Making Us Happy, said The Amazing Race Canada. I was listening to that this week. It was from a little bit back, but that is what was making him happy. So Shout out for the Amazing Race Canada.
That makes me happy. That is the thing that's making me happy this week.
I nearly I had to go back because I was walking and I was like, what? What did he just say? Because it's like you almost feel like you're not, am I awake? Am I dreaming? But it's cool to hear because that podcast is really popular.
That's true. It's a fantastic podcast. And I have to say, on some level, I am glad that Linda's talents are being used in a fantastic way and lots of people get to hear Pop Culture Happy Hour every week. And also, Linda Holmes not recapping Amazing Race anymore means that I get to do what she used to do for the people she used to do it for. So there's that as well.
Yes. And she's one of the reasons, one of the big reasons I got so into the Amazing Race originally was reading her very, very long recaps that tells you that pity. But you're doing a great job too.
Yeah, it's big shoes to fill. That's how I got into it as well.
I think we've covered all the big questions of the week, unless you have others.
I think those are the big questions this week. We love it when we hear from you guys, and I'm going to go ahead and say, I don't mind if you spoil us a little bit. When you're finished, all you Canadians, when you're finished watching the episode, go ahead and, while the questions are fresh in your mind, feel free to tweet them at us. We usually get to the episode within 24 hours. It's not a huge deal. So we are always happy to hear from you at any time, and don't worry about spoilers, because we'll be there soon enough. So you can go ahead and leave us feedback in several different ways. We love hearing what you think about the episodes, and that is most easily accomplished by just going on to robswebsite.com, finding the thread for the episode, and leaving us a comment there. It gives you as many characters as you like to opine your hearts out about the episode, about the job we're doing. We love hearing from you there. We also love getting your tweets, and that's where we get the most of the bulk of our questions, I think. So you could tweet at me at Haymaker Hattie.
And I am at the Dan Heaton. And I will give a call out for questions, but I want to reiterate what Jess said, because I do think, once you've seen it, because usually we'll record a few days later, given that we're in the US and we have to gather the episode. But anytime I will see it. My Twitter feed is popular, but it will not get buried among the other tweets that I receive. I don't want to oversell myself. So do it right away, or like just said on the website, and we'll definitely try to answer the questions.
The other way, we also put out a call for questions, or Dan usually does, because Dan is more on top of this stuff than I am, because he is an excellent co-host in this regard. In our Facebook group that is available only to patrons of Rob Has a Podcast, we have lively discussion going on there almost every week. So if you would like to become a patron, I know that is greatly appreciated. Helps Rob keep the lights on, helps the podcasts keep on being awesome. And I will also put in a little plug, because patrons of Rob Has a Podcast get all of our secret information on how to watch Amazing Race Canada when you yourself are not in Canada. Because it is something people frequently ask me. How are you getting access to these episodes? We know you're not Canadian, because you're not that cool. And the answer is, there's a lot of ways you can do it. Some of them are very technically complicated. Some of them are less technically complicated. Some of them are as simple as somebody posting a link in a Facebook group. And that Facebook group is the one you get when you become a patron. So that is my plug for that. Become a patron. We'll help you get access to Amazing Race Canada. So with all of that having been said, Dan, is there anything else we need to tell the listeners apart from giving them a hashtag?
Oh, the hashtag. Oh, and I will not do anything involving vibrate, because that would be bad. I do kind of like Toad Road. But we did not discuss that on the podcast, but I did enjoy that. That was the name of the speed bump.
I think Toad Road is a fine choice of a hashtag.
Let's do it. So if you would, when you are responding to this podcast, definitely use the hashtag Toad Road, and I will check it and make sure I read whatever you write, which I'm sure will be how much you enjoyed our wonderful banter.
Well, everybody enjoys our wonderful banter, Dan.
That is true. But I love to hear it, just to make me feel better about myself.
Yes, please help Dan's ego and tweet at us with the hashtag Toad Road. Let us know that you got all the way through this wonderful bit of banter. So thank you very much, Dan, for another excellent week of podcasting. And thank you to all the listeners. And we'll see you next week.